This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Welcome to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. My name is Rich Bradbury, and as usual, I am joined by my bestest friends in the entire world, Arif Ruse. He is a man with the news. Say hello, Arif.
Hello, Richard.
And over there somewhere is Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello, Richard and Arif, and hello, listeners. And, you know, I really feel sorry for Richard because if we both are his bestest friends, he's a very depressed man. We got to do something for him.
I'm a lonely man.
Anyway, as usual, a show in three parts. We've got news coming up at the top of the show, followed by some stuff. We've got the Smart number one. We've got some Mercedes coming up, the Lotus coming up. And then at the end of the show, of course, it's a car review. And surprise, it's a BMW car review. I'm not surprised anymore. Arif, kick us off then. What have we got coming up in the news today?
We're going to start off with some news with some Singaporeans. And I suppose, you know, we shouldn't point out that it's Singaporeans. They're just tourists coming over. They're our neighboring countries. We should be friendly to them. After all, they are the most powerful nation in Southeast Asia. Are they not?
Define powerful. But no, don't. Okay, yes, carry on.
Anyway, over the past few weeks, you know, since the borders reopened, we've had some news about what certain people were doing when they were coming over here. And one particular story that took over last week that went viral on TikTok was where a couple took their Tesla Model 3 from Singapore right up north into Penang. And they were using autopilot. They were filming the whole experience. And the driver even said, wow, autopilot's so sharp over here. Wala way. And the interesting thing is that you like my Singaporean accent.
That was very good. Yeah, well done.
The interesting thing is that, you know, they managed to get up to Penang without any problems from Singapore. And they stopped in several places along the West Coast, you know, obviously in Johor Bahru, there's a charging station there. In Subang, there's a charging station. Somewhere in Perak, there's a charging station. And of course, Penang as well. All in all, actually, even with the minuscule amount of infrastructure, charging infrastructure that we have in Malaysia, he showed that it was possible. And the best part was he even had the time to take a ferry to Langkawi from Perlis. And, you know, on that trip, it's 1.5 hours. There's literally nothing to do while you're on the boat. So he was watching Netflix with his wife. So that's the future of cars, isn't it? couple of interesting other things. He listed the price on a Jom Charge charger, which it cost him 42 ringgit to get about 237 kilometers of electric range, which is quite interesting. And a netizen did the maths on that, and it returned to be actually quite normal in terms of pricing. Disappointingly normal. You will get about the same amount of, you know, range in a petrol-powered car for 42 ringgit. And as some people pointed out, you know, the problem is that there is a huge amount of pre-planning still needed when it comes to electric cars, because you're constantly thinking about the range.
Yeah.
Likely, you know, Daniel, I don't know if you've driven from Singapore to Penang. How long would that take?
Yeah, I've done the journey in about 6 odd hours with one stop. The thing is, it's not a question of the journey. I'm a little bit, you know, I've been quiet all this while. Yeah. Why are you guys always knocking the Singaporeans, you know?
don't you play innocent.
They bring their Singapore dollar here. They spend it. They help our economy, you know. They show us how to make good char kway teow. They show us how to make good chicken rice. You know, good, they show us how to make good banana leaf Indian curries and all. And
are you trying to get us cancelled here? Is that what you...
You know, they're nice people. They come here, you know, and then you guys are just finding excuses. I don't know about this Jom Charge, how much they're paying, the petrol they're using. Let them use a little bit of subsidized petrol. It's okay. Let them even use subsidized EV charging facilities, because in Singapore, electricity is very expensive. Like Richard pointed out a few weeks ago, should Singaporeans be using their EVs to charge on our subsidized TNB?
You're just completely throwing me under the bus there.
Yeah. And what's wrong with that?
No, I mean, it just had me thinking. I mean, we had that whole discussion about, you know, the Singaporeans propping up their cars and trying to fill as much petrol in and taking advantage of the subsidized petrol thing. And it just got me thinking, you know, if petrol is subsidized and then we have these drivers coming up from Singapore. Yeah. Thanks, Daniel. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm gonna end by saying this, okay? Richard, don't get upset yet. Don't get upset yet, okay? Everyone goes on and on about the Singaporeans doing this. What about the Thai people driving across because they don't have subsidized fuel? Mm. They come into Malaysia.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
On the northern side, and they are enjoying our subsidized fuel and also our subsidized electricity. Mm-hmm. Because they also pay a higher electricity price. But why do you always knock the Singaporeans?
Because we're jealous of them. Deep down inside, we're really jealous.
It's because I'm half Singaporean. You're angry with me.
But it is true. You know, let's get a stand on this. Should we subsidize EV power as we transition towards electric vehicles?
Well, I think it's going to happen very soon that they'll say, okay, Singaporean car cannot charge unless they pay a full price. But how are you going to change that? How are you going to change the tariff on an EV charger to, you know, subsidize or not subsidize? Because why? You don't have two types of electricity. In a petrol station, you have subsidized and unsubsidized fuel.
Mm. Yep. You know what's going to happen? Somebody is going to develop an app that you have to log into using your Malaysian IC before you can go to one of these charging stations. And when you go to the charging station, you, I don't know, scan some kind of barcode or whatever, and it identifies you as a Malaysian, you get one tariff. If you don't have that app using a Malaysian IC, you get charged a different tariff. Mm.
Okay, so you heard it here first. Richard is going to develop this app and make loads of money.
Richard is giving somebody out there who has far more money and connections than I do too. I mean, something like that makes sense to me. You know,
it does.
You don't even need an app. If you could just use your IC or something to identify.
Correct. Anyway, we'll see what happens in the next few months.
Yeah, definitely. Something will prop up for sure.
I mean, at the moment now, we've got 3 million listeners. One of them will definitely go up to the Singaporeans and say, this is what's happening. You got to do something about it.
Mm. I guess so. But anyway, we have another pretty big story. It's the talk of the automotive town. Mm. And the town is Tanjung Malim. Because apparently there's been something called the Automotive High-Tech Valley, which is going to be launched in Tanjung Malim. And it's quite an curious introduction because we have heard many rumors about this since early on in January, and finally it's been confirmed. And what's been confirmed is that the DRB HiCom, the group that owns basically half of Proton, wants to develop this automotive high-tech valley in Tanjung Malim that sits right next to the Proton factory. And over 4,000 acres have been earmarked for it, for Geely and their list of automotive parts suppliers and vendors. There's possibilities of up to 370,000 new job opportunities as a result over the next half a decade or so while this is starting up. Mm-hmm. There's the proposal, which apparently consists of a whole load of buzzwords from the NEP 2020, like next-gen vehicles and MaaS, which is mobility as a service. And it will even have a research university to, quote-unquote, nurture a new generation of engineers for the automotive industry in IT, design, AI, software, etc., and all that stuff. But the question is always, guys, is it actually all that?
I'm glad you asked that question because you heard it here first. I'm going to share this with all our 3 million listeners. This is a huge real estate opportunity.
Real estate?
Well, 370,000 new jobs. Where are these people going to stay?
That's your takeaway from this, is it?
Yes. So start buying up land
okay.
around Tanjung Malim and start building houses.
Okay.
Well, you know, in Tanjung Malim, they have apparently one of the oldest railway stations in Malaysia. Maybe they could finally revive one of those. But, you know, the question I actually had was about cars, not real estate.
Oh, okay. I thought it was, you know, real estate opportunities.
Is it all that, Daniel?
It is. No, actually, what happened is DRB wants to do this and they invite, from what I know, they invited Geely. Geely thought, okay, it's a great opportunity. Let's do this together. But there's also going to be, you know, development of new vendors. There's going to be development of partnerships with Chinese vendors who come here to put together this whole, you know, electrified program. I think it's a good idea. I think it's, like they said, you know, creation of jobs and everything else. They have to do this because why? As we all know, in the last few years, they've lost a lot of car building opportunities to Indonesia and Thailand. whether it's electric cars or electric batteries or anything to do with the with future automotive tech. So this will actually bring back some of that, you know, job opportunities and also, you know, much needed income.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, over the past few years, there's also been talk of, like, you know, Geely wanting to turn Proton into an export hub and a regional champion in Southeast Asia as well. So yes, this is definitely going against the news of, you know, Chery opening up in Indonesia, as Daniel said, and Great Wall Motors in Thailand. But it's not going to be, you know, like a Silicon Valley, is it? It's going to be more like a DRP, Hicom Valley, or Geely.
Well, it's going to be an EV Valley.
Okay.
Electric vehicles. I mean, it's primarily for electric vehicles. They'll probably have a whole testing facility for autonomous driving, you know, and things like that. Because why? They got to think of the next generation. And China is moving far ahead. So working with Geely, which is one of the biggest automotive groups in the world, just makes a lot of economic and technology sense.
Okie dokie. Shall we take a short break here, gentlemen?
Yes.
All right, folks, we're going on a short break, so don't go too far. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes after these messages here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. Welcome back to Cruise Control. Of course, I'm on the phone lines with Arif Roos, he's the man with the news, and Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. We've just done a little bit of news earlier on. Now we have some car launches. Arif, what do you want to kick off with?
Just now we were talking a little bit about Geely, weren't we? So right now, we're going to be talking about one of Geely's newest cars. It's a, partnership with Mercedes-Benz, and it's the reintroduction of the Smart brand. And they have this new car, which I thought was called the Smart Number One, but turns out it's called the Smart Hashtag One.
No.
Which is hashtag a dumb name. But, you know, a lot of excitement over this car, particularly because in January, Proton Ada, which is the largest Proton dealer in Malaysia, they signed a Memorandum of Agreement, an MOA, to sell and distribute this so-called Smart Revival, Smart Hashtag One. And you guys see the picture. It looks cute, like all smart cars do, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, unlike smart cars of old, it's not small. This is most likely the size of a Mini Countryman and is based on the same platform as, remember, the Lotus Eletre that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago?
Yes.
5.1 meters long. You know, it's using the same platform, but it's not quite as long. It's about 4.2 meters long, this car. Some technical specifications: single motor driving the rear wheels, 270-ish horsepower, 66 kilowatt hour battery, 400 volt architecture, and about 400 kilometers of electric driving range. Inside is quite interesting because, you know, this is a partnership between Geely and Mercedes-Benz. So Geely clearly did all of the electronic stuff. As mentioned, it's the platform from the Lotus. It's a platform from Geely's new Zeekr car as well. But inside, it kind of resembles the Mercedes-Benz design language with the sort of vents and the cubby holes and the screens and all of those stuff. And it has all the tech and all the necessary buzzwords, like over-the-air updates, smart ecosystem, connected products and services, which almost makes it sound like a mobile phone. And it makes me angry.
It makes you angry because there's no selfie camera, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know how much I love taking selfies, Daniel.
Yes.
Oh, we do. We do. Only two.
I only have like two pictures. But, you know, we have the pictures of these cars. Are we impressed with, you know, what sort of package it is?
It doesn't look all that different to a lot of the other kind of... I mean, it's cute, right?
That's about it, right?
That's about it. Yeah, it looks like a turtle.
Yeah, I'll agree with Richard. You know, it's just... It looks like, okay, you know?
Exactly.
It doesn't stand out. It doesn't say, wow, I want this car. It's unlike the Kia EV6, it doesn't say, whoa, I want this car, you know?
And, you know, when Smart first launched all them years ago, you know, it was so drastically different to anything we saw on the market. It was like, wow, this is so cool. It's so different. I mean, I might not want one, but yeah, cool. This, I'm like, meh.
Yeah.
That's true. Remember when the Smart Photo was launched and everybody kind of looked at it as one of those like push pram trolleys, the red and yellow ones at the supermarket. It doesn't seem as unique as it should be. It's not as fashionable as, you know, we know Smart to be. But there is the big question, because we mentioned Proton and a lot of people have mentioned Proton. So since, you know, Proton Edar might be bringing it over, and since that the automotive high-tech valley will be introduced and this might be produced in Tanjung Malim or at least distributed from there, how low can this go in terms of pricing?
How low can you go?
Okay, I'm going to burst everybody's bubble here, okay? Because when I put up the story of this car when it was first introduced and everything else, the you know, we estimated, you know, and our estimates are quite good, 198,000 ringgit, even with a Proton badge. I'm not saying they're going to use a Proton badge, but I'm saying if they use a Proton badge, it'll still be around that price. Now, a lot of people came back and said, no, because if the badge is a Proton with the incentives, blah, 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 it should be around 100, 120, 130,000. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is not possible simply because already the cars are tax-free. Electric cars are tax-free, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the tax-free price from Europe and you just do a simple conversion without even adding any margin or warranty or after-sales or shipping, it's already about 180,000 ringgit.
Oh.
Now, whoever sells it here has to put some margin because, you know, they got showroom after-sales and everything else. Plus, shipping cost is no longer cheap. And then you got to think about after sales for the warranty, you know? Now, when you add all that in, now, even with the high-tech village or the high-tech valley coming up with DRB, HiCom and everything else, and Geely's involvement, the car is still tax-free. So the only incentive you might get back is from the Malaysian government, if they're going to give anything, to own an electric car. I might give you some income tax rebate. And how much income tax rebate can you do? 5,000, maybe 10,000 a year? I mean, that's already hefty. So the problem with the pricing of electric cars, as we've said many times before, is not because there's no incentives or whatever. It's because our exchange rate is not favorable to the purchasing power that we want to have, you know?
Yeah.
Now, if we were in, say, for example, if we were, our money was equal to, say, Singapore dollar, for example, like how it was 25 years ago, then this vehicle will be about 120 to 110,000 ringgit, which is affordable for most Malaysians.
Yeah.
But because our currency is not that favorable, it's just not going to happen, you know. So electric cars will be expensive until the R&D costs come down, battery costs come down, and our exchange rate moves up a little bit.
Yep, which is, I guess, worth mentioning that the automotive high-tech valley might be able to bring those R&D costs down, right, in the future?
Volume. We don't have volume. How big is our population? Now, if you talk about, you know, a high-tech valley bringing costs down, you have to talk about somewhere like Indonesia or Philippines or Thailand where they have a high population count. We have a small population count.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still be relying a lot on imported stuff.
Anyway, we have a car that is probably targeted towards the niche market because this is the Mercedes EQS, but we've already seen the EQS and it was a saloon. It was one of the most streamlined cars on the market right now. But apparently Mercedes have launched this car called the EQS SUV, and it is essentially an SUV version of the EQS. We see the pictures. It just looks like an enlarged EQA, doesn't it?
It is, and it's basically a GLS with electric powertrain.
I'm kind of disappointed about how similar it looks. You know, this is supposed to be the biggest and baddest and the most future-forward Mercedes EQ car. This is supposed to make a statement, but it just doesn't make a statement, unlike the saloon, at least.
Maybe because you lean more towards the brand from Munich, you know?
No! I do like the Mercedes brands, you know, but
okay.
This sort of electric GLS is, you know, it has seven seats at the back in the third row. It has two individual seats and they are able to do that because obviously, you know, electric powertrain, there's no need for a fuel tank at the back. There's only a little motor at the back as well.
Right.
So it has the same unique Mercedes EQ face. As mentioned, it kind of just looks like an enlarged EQA. It has the same sort of rear lights as the EQC. in the interior features all the gizmos, the style and the luxury of the EQS sedans. That's like the diamond pleated seats, the MBUX hyperscreen, two rear screens as well. And it's very clear that, you know, the family DNA is very strong. And I guess, you know, the question that I wanted to pitch you guys is, should they have done something different? Because look at the BMW iX. That looks nothing like a BMW, for better or for worse.
Well, my opinion is, I like the look of this car. I think it makes a statement. I think it's not a completely radically different vehicle. But, you know, Mercedes-Benz have always been a little bit more conservative than the rest. Mm. And they've always been able to use that conservative design language to keep their sales at number one. So I think I'll be happy with this.
Yeah, just to echo kind of what Daniel's saying, I think they're playing it safe, you know.
Mm. Mm.
They know they're going to sell and shift enough units. And I think if they, you know, did something drastically different, you know, people would be like, oh, what are you doing? You know?
Which is what happened with BMW.
I think that's the word. I mean, they're conservative. They're playing it safe. Yeah, it's going to sell. We know that. It's a Merc. It's an SUV. It's going to shift.
Yeah. In terms of technicals, it is still going to shift despite all of its weight, because there's three trim levels and all of them have more than 350 horsepower. All of them have more than 500 kilometers of range, which is very, very impressive. And a couple of weeks ago, we spoke about a car that had about 120 kilowatt hour battery, the largest that I know of, certainly. This EQS has probably the second largest, 107.8 kilowatt hour battery, which means that it can use all of its, you know, at the top line, EQS 580 format, to get us 536 horsepower, 800 newton meters of torque. Despite all of that power, you can still travel more than 500 kilometers in that car. So very, very impressive on that part. Yeah, it's going to sell. It's Mercedes-Benz. Yeah,
of course.
A car that people might have some questions about whether it will sell or not is the brand new Lotus. And Daniel, you went to see this car.
I saw it in person, touched it, didn't get a chance to drive it. You know, I wanted to test the airbags, but they said, no, there's only one in Malaysia, so you're not going to test the airbags. But when the car starts delivery pretty soon, we might loan you one, you know, and register it and insure it and put it in your name. This is a brand new Lotus. It's the Emira. There's been so much hype about it. There's been so much talk about it. Sadly, it didn't tickle me enough.
Oh. Well,
okay, I'll tell you why, guys. I mean, I saw it. We've been seeing pictures of it, you know, YouTube, Jenson Button driving it around, some celebrities taking it out and everything else globally. And, you know, it looks gorgeous. Great features, great tech. But I'm sorry, it's no longer a Lotus. It's no longer a real Lotus. Yes, it's got a manual gearbox option, but there's just too much tech in the car. It's too heavily clad with leather and refinement. And then, you know, it started me thinking about the Lotus Evora. You know, the last Lotus that was launched here was the Evora, right?
Yeah.
It had a 3.5 V6 Toyota borrowed engine. This version that's come to Malaysia, of course, they got a 2-liter version, but the one that's come to Malaysia right now is using the same kind of engine. So, of course, in a newer shell and everything else. But if you take a closer look at it, it looks like a tweaked Lotus Evora. And the Lotus Evora, when it came, was 600,000 ringgit. This car is double the price. And at double the price, I've got so many other options, like the Porsche Cayman GT4. I know the Cayman GT4 is a very common car and everything, but you see, Lotus always had that edge of being, you know, Spartan, lightweight, in your face, you know, hands-on motoring, you know?
Mm.
And now I think they've just lost that because they want to go global, they want to go mass, they want to hit right at Porsche. Please, go ahead. I know you want to make a big name and everything else, but as a Lotus enthusiast, I'm not interested in buying this car.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yes, I'm actually more interested now to go and find a second-hand Evora.
Wow.
Any thoughts on that, Rich?
Lotus were Lotus because they were simple, right? Small, simple, speedy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of the beauty of them, you know, the bareness, the stripped downness of them. And, you know, sticking a lot of tech into it brings it up to 2022 in terms of that aspect of things. But clearly, it's not what some people want, you know. Not just calling Daniel, I think I'd probably feel a bit disappointed if it was too techy as well, you know. Mm. I just want to get in there and it'd be really super simple, nice dials, touchy-feely, no touch screens. That's what I'd want.
You want to hear the whole drama going on as you drive along, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just a little bit too refined, I guess.
I mean, I've not driven it, but you know, from the YouTube videos, fine, it's refined, it's nice. Okay, it's quick, handles well, but so does the GT4, and the GT4 is cheaper. And then you got the other option, which you have highlighted here, you know, the Alpina A110, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what I'm trying to say is, I think anybody who's currently driving a Lotus Elise or Exige, I know those cars are much cheaper, but assuming that these people also have a lot of money, I don't think after test driving this car, they'll want to own it.
That is interesting.
Ooh. That's my personal opinion. It's just like, for example, I drive a first generation Mazda MX-5 Roadster, right?
Yeah. Mm.
Now you get me into the latest MX-5 Roadster. It's nice. It's so accomplished. It's put together beautifully. It's so nice to drive, but I'm not drawn to buy it.
Fair enough. Mm.
I'm drawn to find another older MX-5 and do it up, you know?
All right. Okay.
Well, there's just some technicals before we head to the break.
Please.
As mentioned, Daniel said, you know, this is pretty much, in terms of the technical stuff, this is pretty much an updated Lotus Evora. You've got two doors, two-seater, 3.5-liter V6 engine, 6-speed manual, about 400 horsepower. What, I guess, has changed for Lotus is the fact that you can actually, you know, have an options list and have different sort of packages where you can buy some stuff, you know, where you can tick some boxes as well. So you can opt for the driver's pack, which gets you some different suspension setups and tires, the design pack, which adds Alcantara headliners, leather seats, and Lotus branded floor mats. I don't know why you would have that in a Lotus, but you know, convenience pack as well, which is not standard, that you get front parking sensors, a reverse camera, or auto wipers and mirrors. So I guess that is kind of, you know, in the spirit of Lotus, where you get just nothing. But we hinted at the price. It is double of what the Evora used to be at 600,000. This is 1.131 million. So lots to think about. And this is the general consensus of cruise control. If you've got a current Lotus or if you've got a Porsche, unlikely that you're going to be hunting for this new one.
Crikey, O'Reilly. Okay, time for a break then, ladies and gents. We'll be back in just a few moments here on Cruise Control. We do actually have a car review coming up, the BMW 135i E82. That's all coming up right after these messages here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. If you're only just joining us, we've had charging cars, High Tech Valley launched in Tanjung Malim. We've spoke a little bit about the Mercedes EQS SUV, the Lotus Emira just before the break. Before that, the Smart Hashtag One. Yes, it's really cool, Hashtag One. But we have a car review coming up. Arif, well, who's doing the car review? Whose is it?
It's Daniel, to be honest.
What?
It's mine because it's a used car review, gents.
Oh, of course. Yes, come on then. Come on then.
Okay, so this one just dropped in my lap a few days ago by chance, purely by chance. I didn't see it being advertised. Someone who was looking for a BMW Z4, okay? Mm. Which is a convertible. It's a fun little car. He wanted the 3-liter Z4, not the 2-liter or the 2.5. He wanted the 3-liter, slightly older model. But you know, there's quite a bit in the market now for about 50,000 to 75,000 ringgit, depending on condition and maintenance. So he was looking for one of those. He went to see a few, and then he saw this. Now he wasn't a big fan of the whole drop top, you know, convertible experience. He just thought the Z4 looked really good. But when he saw this car, he came and asked me, he said, what do you think? I said, I've actually forgotten about this car. You know, I completely forgot about this car. And I'll tell you why, gentlemen. Because when this car was launched in Malaysia, which was quite a long time ago, 2007, I was in the business. I was still reviewing cars and I was doing reviews and everything else. But BMW Malaysia did not give us this car to test drive. Not because they banned us or they didn't like us. Simply because it was such an expensive, low-volume vehicle, you know? Mm. Now, at the launch, the price was 423,000 ringgit. Now, in today's calculation, that would probably be around 600,000 ringgit.
Wow. For a car that is basically tiny, to be honest.
Exactly. It's basically the size of an E30 BMW 3 Series, you know? And it's a two-door. So they knew that, you know, they're not going to get a lot of sales. They knew it's not going to be a volume seller. The dealers were not over-enthusiastic. So, you know, they just launched it and said, okay, the car is available, blah, blah. So we never got to test drive it. And to be honest, I've not driven this car. I don't know anyone who owns this car, okay? But when my friend said, hey, you know, this car, and he started going on with the specs, I said, yeah, I remember the specs of this car. It's a, you know, it's a 3-liter, six-cylinder, a proper six-cylinder, twin-turbo, proper twin-turbo engine, and it's got 302 brake horsepower. That gives it an acceleration time of 5.3 seconds, assuming everything is running perfectly. Now, if you think back, 15 years ago, 5.3 seconds is supercar territory.
Yep.
You know, yeah. That is basically just 1 second slower than a Ferrari or a Porsche or even a Lamborghini, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're getting it in a BMW that can sit four people, you know, with a boot.
Yep.
So he said he's only seen one for sale. And this is the one that we put the pictures up. It was a little car dealer selling it. And I told him, I said, go and have a look at the car, you know, and if you like it, you like it. If you don't like it, you don't like it. But as we did a bit more research on this car, we realized that, you know, the asking price of 90,000 ringgit was actually a little bit high at first. But then when we started looking around, most people, when they look at a BMW coupe of that era, they will look at the E92 coupe, which is basically the E90 sedan as a two-door, okay?
Yeah.
So these, plenty in the market, whether it's a 320, 323, 325, or even better, the 330, which is the best to get, you know? But these cars are valued at around 55 to 65,000 in the market right now. Now, I'm not saying they're worse off than this car or better off. They're better off in terms of size because there's more room. But if you talk about real driving dynamics, I think this the current E92 that is on sale will not be able to match this 135i E82.
I can honestly vouch for that because we had an old 7 Series that we were running, and BMW wanted to use the car for BMW 7 Series launch. So they gave us a 125i. Very, very exciting car. I think it handles exactly like what you think BMW should.
Right.
I think if you've driven a small BMW, the steering is so quick. The ride is very stiff. It's borderline harsh, but it's subtle. But make no mistake, though, when you're getting into like one of these 1 Series, bear in mind that these are quote-unquote entry-level BMWs. You don't really get that much in it.
But simple is easy. Simple is reliable.
Very true.
And these cars come fully imported. And, you know, like this car had a white exterior, nice wheels on it, you know, a red interior. Everything is factory. I mean, I thought about it, you know, the premium of 30, 40,000 ringgit actually makes a lot of sense because you're getting a very special car, very rare. And it's, you know, if you're a real driver, if you're someone who actually enjoys driving and is just fed up of this front wheel drive, four cylinder, you know, nonsense that's coming out from every manufacturer. I use the word nonsense because I'm in that old school where I want a rear wheel drive, proper, you know, grunt from a car.
Yep.
I think this is really good value. And then on top of that, you know, with the recent JDM, you know, excitement and everything else, if you compare this to a JDM car, I know some people say I'm going off tangent here, but you know, you're looking at a classic 15-year-old BMW, modern classic. JDM cars, a lot of them are modern classics, like, you know, the Nissan 240, the RX-8, you know, RX-8 not so popular. The RX-7 is just ridiculous, you know, the four-door Skylines, you know.
350Z maybe.
Maybe the 350Z. If you start comparing all these cars, they're costing more and they're not as well built as this car and they're not as fun as this car, you know.
Agreed.
And I did a little bit of mathematics to look at this now. The first owner took a 330,000 ringgit loss, right? Over 15 years. Well, that's depreciation, you know, leave it be. But if you were to buy this car today, how much more can you lose? You know, maintenance, maybe 6,000 a year. I'm talking about even with road tax and insurance and everything else. Maybe another 6,000 on, you know, vehicle depreciation. So you're losing your cost of running this car is 1,000 ringgit a month. Now, for 1,000 ringgit a month, you get this kind of little bombshell. Why not?
Yeah.
So I'll end by saying this. If there's another one for sale, because I know this one is going to be sold while the show is going running, but if there's another one for sale, please go and have a look at it. You know, check it out. Take it for a test drive if possible. And I think you'll want to own it immediately.
Certainly me. Of course. But I just want to add some stuff about this particular 135i with the engine, because I'm sure this owner has, you know, most of these cars, the 135i has such a high price. It's only enthusiasts, BMW enthusiasts, who would buy it, and correct, they would know how to take care of these cars. Yes. But if you are ever looking for a 135i, these cars are powered with the N54 engine, which I think over the past three generation of turbo BMW engines is probably known to be one of the most problematic.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. You know, high pressure fuel pump, you got the oil sump, you got the gaskets, which eventually leak, and obviously all the cooling systems. But those are things that, especially if you buy a BMW enthusiast car, those are things that BMW enthusiasts will be willing to stick with, especially for this specific person who has stuck with this car for 15 years. With almost 100,000 kilometers in mileage, that's probably been looked at already and probably been, you know, attended to. So I think if you are looking for a 3-liter, a 1-series or a 3-liter 3-series with this engine, you know, make sure you got all the receipts. Make sure you check it out properly.
Interesting. All right. Shall we wrap up, gentlemen?
Yes, we should.
Great review there, Daniel. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, folks, if you're only just joining us, where have you been? You've missed the show. Of course, you can download the podcast wherever you normally download it from. We recommend the BFM app. It's available in the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Anyway, I'm tired. Leave me alone. Anyway, join us next week, same time, same place, for Cruise Control here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.